lectionary at lunch. Glad to see everybody here this afternoon. The text for today is a very significant one from the Old Testament. In English, I think it's Isaiah chapter 9, verses 2 through 7, but you'll notice right away that the way that the Hebrew text marks the verses is a little different. So in Hebrew, it's actually chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. That's what we're going to be doing today. Before we start, there's a couple of things to keep in mind about the text, and as we translate it, I'll kind of point these out to you. First of all, remember that the text takes place against the background of the Syro-Ephraimite War. So in the middle of the 8th century, well, around 734, when Assyria was arrayed against Syria and Ephraim, and remember, the northern kingdom tried to get Judah involved in it, and there was, again, a lot of domination by foreign powers. So it was a very, quote, dark time in Israel's history, and it was just a few short years later, remember, that the northern kingdom went into exile at the hands of the Assyrian Empire. So the north is, I bring that up because it's the north that is addressed in the passage just previous to ours, all right? So that the people that experienced the worst of the exile, the darkest of that time, is also the one to whom salvation is going to come first. So kind of keep that in mind. All right. So our passage then is the transition. It's not the transition, but it is a transition from Chapter 8, which is a description of the judgment, of the judgment and condemnation of God's people, a description of the darkness, to this passage that you can characterize as this bright light in the midst of darkness. So a transition, kind of think in terms of from dark to light. And actually in the Hebrew text, that verse 23 is an important part of that transition, as it, I think, kind of forms the bridge between what comes before in chapter 8 and then what we will see in our great text in chapter 9. Now again, that verse, it's kind of good, it's not included here, it's filled with obscurities. And you will see translators handle it in very different ways. But let me give you kind of a rough translation of it, because it is important for the next thing that I want to say. So notice in verse 23, he seems now, the prophet's vision seems to go from darkness to light, from hopelessness to hope, from condemnation and judgment to grace and salvation. So where it starts out, the kilo mu'af, that mu'af means darkness, and the mutzak means distress. Okay, so for not darkness will there be to the one who there is distress for her, to whom there is distress. There's, notice the asher and la form that resumptive pronoun. So notice it's a turn to hope. Not there will not be darkness to whom there is distress. So again, notice the bridge forming. And now these last three lines. As the time the former, and again there's grammatical difficulties here and referent difficulties which I'm not going to go into, but here's how most translators handle it. As the former time, Hakal, that's from Kalal Ahithiel, he treated badly or lightly, namely God, the land of Zebulun, notice the north, and the land of Naphtali. See, so as at the former time, and again, probably a reference to this conflict with Assyria and the Assyrian domination that's coming to the region and is already there. Okay, but the later time, Hikbid, notice it's a perfect, but now his vision seems to have gone to the future. And so what we, I think most translators translate this as a future tense because perfects, either for dialectical reasons or maybe for rhetorical reasons, people differ on that, can refer to future. All right? And that's what you have throughout this passage. So notice the key that I want you to see in verse 23 is this transition from looking at the past of Zebulun and Naphtali to the future. So, and at the later time, that Acharon, notice, he will glorify the way by of the sea. Okay, on the other side of the Jordan, Galil, later to be known as Galilee of the Goyim, of the nations. All right. So notice how his vision shifts. Now the reason I say that is because our passage is predominantly perfect tenses, as you will see. All right. So the question is, how do you translate this? And if the vision of the prophet, so I mean, you can handle this a number of ways, and commentaries do. Against this darkness, does the prophet's vision then go to the hope that God has given his people through the covenant of David? Right? And does he then talk about the theological significance of that promise in a way that's kind of telling us, yes, this will happen? In which case, you might want to translate all those things with future tenses. And as you will see, some translators do that. On the other hand, it could be that he is, again, with his eyes focused on the future, that Isaiah is being taken to that kind of future time, so to speak, and drawing back the curtain and describing what he sees. So that's still oriented toward the future. Some translators still understand it that way and yet translate the past tenses with past tense as kind of description. So you'll see that as well. Could also be that his eyes are focused on an event that took place, and a lot of people see the background of this passage, the birth of a child to the King of David in this period of darkness. And so that the prophet speaks thinking about that birth, but knowing that the hopes that always come with the birth of a child, you know, his thoughts are also towards the future, so that he speaks about the present birth of the child, but in a way that's kind of hyperbole. The language doesn't quite fit this, so that we see the ultimate fulfillment in Christ. All right. So as we go through, beginning at verse 1, kind of just keep these things in mind as I'm translating. Okay, so verse 1, Ha'am ha'holakim b'choshek ra'u or gadol yoshve be'eretz tzalmavet or naga alehem. Okay, the people, those walking, participle call from Halak, the people, those who are walking b'choshek, in darkness. Okay, ra'u, here's the first one from ra'a. Notice it's perfect. Some translate, we'll see a or gadol, we'll see a great light. Or as description of what, you know, if God has kind of taken him there. Have seen a great light. So he's describing what's going to happen. And also in reference now, notice if you think about it in reference to the birth of the child, putting the hopes of the Davidic covenant on the child, speaking about him in this great language, so that amidst the darkness, here's this birth that signals hope for God's people. All right, in the terms of a light. Or gadol. Yoshve, the inhabitants in the land. Notice a couple of interesting things syntactically here. Yoshve is a call participle in construct with a prepositional phrase. All right. Now that happens, I mean, it's not that common, but it's not unheard of either. All right. So it just indicates a close connection between the two phrases, okay? The dwellers in the land of Zalmavet. Notice if you break it down, it's shadow of death, but that Zalmavet probably is better translated deep darkness. Okay? A light, Naga, again another perfect tense, has shined Alehem on them. Alright? Now notice he switches from third person to second person as he addresses Yahweh, and it becomes almost praise, note of praise that he, you know, he's kind of telling Yahweh something he already knows, but when you do that, it's like he's wondering at it or marveling at it. So verse 2, Hirbita Hagoy. Okay, from, notice the first word is from Rabbah, Hifil, perfect, second common singular. Rabbah means to become great or numerous. The Hifil then goes from a passive to a transitive. You have increased Hagoy, the nation. Or again, keep in mind, you will increase the nation. Notice the hopes that are invested in the little remnant that's left after the domination by foreign powers. Okay, lo higlata ha simcha. First of all, notice the lo. No, normally translated as not, but there's 15 places, I think, in the Old Testament in which lo, lamed aleph, should be lamed vav, lo to him. And notice if you try to get the negative in here, it doesn't make sense. So it's almost universally thought that this is really supposed to be read to him as kind of a possessive. See, so for him, higdalta, you have increased the joy. All right. Again, higdalta is a hifil perfect second common singular from gadal. To be great in the call, to make great in the hifil. All right. Samchu, they have rejoiced. Lefaneka, before you, kesimchat, as the joy ba katsir, in the harvest time. Katsir is just a noun for harvest, from katsar to harvest. Kasher as yagilu. That's a hollow verb, gul or gil, to rejoice. All right, and this is an imperfect third common plural. As they rejoice, bechal kam shalal. Bechal kam, that's from the root chalak. This is a pl, infinitive construct. You notice it's pl by the negation, the lamed, preceded by the patach. All right. With a third common plural, a masculine plural suffix. So, in their dividing the spoil. Again, probably best rendered as a temporal clause, when they divide the spoil. See, so notice those two clauses are basically in parallel with each other. They rejoice before you as the joy in the harvest. As they, notice the subject here is a impersonal, okay, as people rejoice when they divide the spoil. Notice that the suffix is really the subject of that bechal kam, of that infinitive construct. Okay. Right. Now notice what follows in the next verses are verse 3, verse 4, verse 5 start with key clauses. And here Isaiah begins to talk about the reasons why there is such rejoicing, the reasons for this light. Okay. And here's the first one, verse 3. Ki et ol subalo, for et, notice it's the direct object marker, for the yoke of his burden. Sovel means burden. Alright. Now, in all of these, notice that these are construct constructions, so you always have to ask yourself, what's the relationship between the construct and the genitive? So when it has yoke of his burden, notice that the burden is kind of adjectival or modifying ol, so you might want to translate it like this. For his burdensome yoke, or for the yoke that burdens him, and the mate sikmo, and this is the rod of his shoulder. Okay. Now notice the relationship between these two words is different than the former. So you would translate it, and the rod that's on his shoulder. See, so again, think in terms of a yoke. And now he elaborates again. The shevet, the rod of ha-noges bo, the rod of the one who is oppressing him. Right? Ha-noges is a call participle, and notice it's used as a substantive here, the one oppressing him. Okay, now notice this next word. Ha-chitota, ha-chitota ke-yom midyan. Hachitota, from the root chatat, one of those double ein verbs. Chatat means to be shattered. Here it is a hifil perfect. Second masculine singular. Okay, the letters look all scrambled, but it's those double eins mess you up every time. All right, and it means to shatter. All right, so again, you have shattered, or I still like translating them all as futures. And that would be, I guess, my personal preference, because his eyes are on the future. And so kind of just go with it. I guess it makes it clearer to English readers what he's doing. But again, there's other options depending on how you take it. You will shatter as the day of Midian. This is when Gideon again defeated the Midianites. So he's going back to that. So notice the whole verse. For his burdensome yoke, and the rod on his shoulder, the staff of the one oppressing him, those are all direct objects, you will shatter. So notice it fronts, Isaiah fronts all those, so you have all those things in mind, and now the surprise kind of at the end. You will shatter as the day of Midian. Alright. Verse 4. Ki kol se'on so'en bera'ash. Now here's the second reason. For every, now se'on is It's referring to this laced boot, and you guys kind of all get that picture in your mind that the Assyrian army wore. You know, you can You know, they're kind of sandals, but they're laced up the leg. For every boot, now so'ein is a denominative from that, marching berash. Ra'ash means to shake. Okay. For every boot, marching with shaking. Okay. So again, I don't know what better English. You know, you get the idea of the army marching, tramping through. You know, and some translations kind of bring that out better. Okay. Now the next one. So think in your mind first the sandal. Now vesimla, and I would understand kol again, and garment megolala. Look at this word. Megolala is from the another double line galal, which means to roll. This is a poal participle, feminine singular, and it modifies simla. Remember the passive forms, the puals, the nifals, and the poals, hafals, can very often function as adjectives, modifying a noun. That's what you have here. For every garment rolled, or Kaler Baumgartner suggests a second meaning, every garment soiled with damim, with blood, or spatterings of blood, if you want to kind of understand the plural, is plural referring to parts of the whole. Okay. Ve'hayata will, now notice the ve'hayata le'serefa. When you have haya plus lamed, it means to become very often. Will become serefa, will become burning, or stuff that is burning. See? Ma'akolet, you can all see the root of that from akal. Again, very often in Hebrew, when you have a verbal root, you add a mem to it, it becomes a noun. So you can figure it out even if you've never seen it. Ma'akolet, food for the fire, or fuel for the fire. Again, notice the construct form and the genitive and how you would render that in good English. Okay, so for every boot, tramping or stomping with shaking, and garment soiled with blood will become burning, fuel for the fire. See, that's a great reason to rejoice. It means the defeat of war and the enemy and the oppression. Okay, now here's the key verse, which we all know. Ki yel yulad lanu, bein etan lanu. Notice the kind of rhythm there. For a child, yulad. Here's from yalad, pu'al perfect. Either has been born. Notice, again, in reference to the birth, some say of Hezekiah, some say another child, depending on the dates. Okay, for a child is born to us. A son, nitan, from the root natan. Nifal, again, third masculine singular. A son is given to us. Vatehi hamisra al shikmo. And no, now notice that vatehi, it's a vav consecutive, normally in narrative past tense, but translations universally, notice, render it with future tense because they're thinking of what this child is going to mean. Okay, you could also translate it more in the sense of something that takes place as he speaks, you know, kind of thinking pragmatically. And hereby the government is on his shoulder. So at the birth of the child, you know, the prophet's already thinking of his responsibilities and what he's going to do. Okay? But again, and the rule of the dominion, the misra, sara means to strive with. You add a mem, it means dominion or rule or struggle. And the dominion will be on shikmo, his shoulder. Okay? Va Yikrashimo Pela Yoetz, and his name, and one will call his name. See? So notice it's an impersonal subject, very often rendered in English, idiom says passive. His name will be called. Okay? But one will call his name Pela. That's miracle. Yoetz. Counselor. From Ya'atz to counsel. Again, participle used as substantive. Miracle counselor. Alright? Wonder counselor, one who counsels with wonders or something like that. It's a good way to counsel, right? You can solve marital problems right away if you can do a miracle. Alright, next couple of words. El Gibor, God. Now Gibor is usually used, means mighty one or hero, see? So you could translate it heroic God or God, the hero, or mighty one. And now notice how he keeps kind of upping the appellations as he's calling them. So you go from counselor of wonder counselor to El Gibor, now to Aviad, father. Notice Avi, it's in construct form with Ad. Father of eternity, eternal father. Sar Shalom, prince of peace. Notice an objective genitive, I think, the prince who brings peace, or the prince who announces peace, Sar Shalom. All right. Then verse 6, now notice what you have there is weird. It's a final mem, Lamed Mem, the final mem. And notice how the Masoretes have just kind of stayed with the text. Some suggest that that is because of the, if you notice just the footnote, and there's a lot there I can't go through, I don't have time here, but dittography with what came before. Notice Shalom, Lamed Mem, Lamed Mem. They suggest it could be that. Some suggest the Koray suggests that you read Mar Bay, increase of his government. That's what we'll do here. Concerning the increase of the government and concerning peace, Ein Kates, there will be no end. Okay, now finally, Al Kisei David, on the throne of David, Ve'al Mam Lakto, and over his kingdom. Okay, and you have to understand the verb he will be. Lehakin ota, to establish it. Lehakin, notice, is a hifil infinitive construct from Kun. To establish it, u lesa'ada, and to uphold it. Here's a call infinitive construct from Sa'ad. So to establish it and to uphold it, Bemishpat, with judgment or with justice, Ubitzdaka, and with righteousness, Me'ata, from now ve'ad olam, and forever. The Kinat Yahweh, the zeal of Yahweh Zevaot, the Lord of hosts, Ta'aseh, will do this. Zot is feminine because it refers to the abstract action of the reigning and the kind of the characteristics of the kingdom that this child will bring. Okay, so notice it's a beautiful passage, of course, extremely significant in the history of the church and for us, in which Isaiah announces the fulfillment of the Davidic promises. All right, all I got to say. Thanks for listening.